Welcome to In My Backyard, an open conversation about children and mental health. We all know a child who's struggling, whether that child tells us or not. In this podcast, we speak with experts on the many factors of emotional distress in children, how to address those factors, and how to create a community where all children can be healthy and happy. This podcast is made possible through generous donations from supporters and listeners like you. Please visit tgclb.org or text HOPE to 562-262-5689 to make a one-time donation or join our Hope and Healing Club to become a monthly donor today. Your host is Tricia Costales, CEO of the Guidance Center, a nonprofit children's mental health agency in Long Beach, California.
I am Tricia Costales, your host of In My Backyard. I'm a licensed clinical social worker and the chief executive officer of the Guidance Center, a nonprofit children's mental health agency serving 3,500 children and families every year. We spoke in the last episode about the soaring rates of depression, anxiety, and serious psychological distress amongst today's generation of young people. In the last decade alone, the number of children reporting suicidal thinking and feelings of hopelessness has increased by 71%, while completed suicides by children have increased by 56%. These heartbreaking statistics were true even before the overlay of social isolation and anxiety created by a global pandemic. Children have lost loved ones and parents have lost jobs. The closing of schools has isolated them from the normative social, educational, and developmental experiences of school and sports and play. As pointed out by the New York Times, the school closures have at the same time isolated our children from the teachers and school staff whose open doors and compassionate advice helped them build self-esteem, navigate pressures, and cope with trauma. I've been terribly worried about the impact of this pandemic and the school closures that resulted from it on the already fragile mental health of our children. In today's podcast, we're going to speak with Dr. Tiffany Brown, the Deputy Superintendent of Long Beach Unified School District. A former school psychologist herself, Dr. Brown helps oversee the third largest and one of the most diverse school districts in California. We're fortunate to get her take on how the pandemic has impacted her students and what we will need to do to aid in the transition back to normal. So, welcome, Tiffany. Thank you for joining us today. I have the benefit of knowing you from our shared leadership roles in the community and from your position on the Guidance Center Board of Directors. For our audience, would you please share a little bit about yourself?
Sure. And thanks so much for the opportunity today. So I am currently the Deputy Superintendent for Long Beach Unified School District. I've worked in the school district for 25 years. I began as a school psychologist, back in the mid-90s, and I had the opportunity to work on several schools over on the west side of Long Beach. And I've been an administrator for about the last 15 years in different capacities. Most recently, I was the director of student support services, which oversees all the child welfare and attendance responsibilities for the district. And then most recently, before July, when I stepped into a new position, I had been the assistant superintendent for school support services, which supports our student support services, as well as all of our students with special needs in the district. So I'm in a new role in a very new time.
Great timing to do that in the middle of a pandemic.
It's been a learning curve, that's
well,
for sure.
I'm sure it has been. Well, thank you for taking time to be here. So, understanding that the primary function of school is education, going to school for our kids is not just about science, reading, and math. I was reading in the Economic Policy Institute where they reported about the whole child development that happens at school, meaning the vital things that children learn through interacting with peers and with their teachers, teamwork, social boundaries, emotional self-control, empathy, a sense of self in the world. I know teachers are doing their mighty best, but interacting virtually is just not the same. What are your thoughts about how remote learning is impacting whole child development?
Well, I completely agree with what you said, that teachers are absolutely doing their best and have stretched themselves in so many ways that is completely new for them. And I would add, at a time when many of our adults are dealing with all kinds of life challenges of their own. So I've really seen teachers working hard to reach students, but there has been a tremendous impact in terms of the social connections that children have to school, the amount of trauma that they are exposed to in their life already, and that may be heightened because of the amount of time that's spent in some of the challenging circumstances that we know our children live in. And then also just the fact that our schools are community hubs for lots of needs. And there's an emotional support system that exists at school for many children. And many of our children are really reliant on the positive connections with adults of all kinds at school. And so in the absence of being physically in the school buildings, I think that there is impact to all of those things. I would say just overall emotional well-being. And there's really just a sense of how do we reach students in a way that makes up for some of those things we can't do when we're not in person.
Right. And I absolutely know that teachers are doing their best. Both of my sisters are teachers, and I know how hard they're struggling. I think the relationship loss is beyond teachers. I know kids that can be friends with the janitor or the women in the front office. And it is right now the loss of all of those relationships until we can get back in person. Tiffany, some studies have shown that as many as 83% of children who had a mental health struggle prior to COVID are experiencing an increase in their symptoms since the pandemic. But we're also learning more and more about the broader mental health impact of the pandemic on previously well-adjusted children. Is this mirrored by what your teachers are seeing in their students?
So I've heard teachers share observations in a few ways regarding just general emotional well-being or mental health struggle. One is just the opportunity to really have a different type of snapshot into students' lives. I mean, they're essentially in their living room or in the space where they are doing school every day, and have opportunity to observe some of the dynamics that children live within. So that's something that I've heard feedback shared from teachers about, and a level of concern about some of the experiences that our children are having. The other thing that I've heard teachers share is just a sense of having a hard time knowing their students and what they need. And all of those soft touches that happen through relationship, which could even be a look on a child's face, or recognizing that they're wearing what they've worn for the last couple of days, or recognizing that their affect is different than it normally is. Some of those really observant ways that our teachers get to know our children, the teachers are really feeling a loss of the ability to do that. And at the secondary level, teachers are struggling for students to have cameras turned on for lots of reasons. So there's even less opportunity to observe what students are displaying because they don't often see them. And then the third item that I've heard teachers talk about is just a group of students who have not had the volume of life challenge that some of our young people are used to living with. And so the idea that this experience for some has really been a first time upset, or a first time loss, or a first time disappointment around things that they like to do. And so what we're seeing is a group of our young people who don't have the developed resilience that some of our children have by virtue of how they have lived. And that group of students are really struggling with how to develop the ability to struggle through a time that isn't able to be controlled or managed by other adults and is really just a circumstance that we've all had to deal with.
I just want to make sure I understand that last point, because I think that was really interesting, that in some ways that our kids whose lives are more of a struggle could even be doing better now than kids who have led a fairly charmed life thus far, because they've already built up or had to learn the skills of resiliency, whereas other kids maybe haven't yet. This is their first real life challenge.
We've really seen that. And I certainly want to say that I know everybody has struggled in some way in the last almost year. We're approaching a year in which schools have been closed. It's hard to believe, but going back to March 13th of 2020, when we closed school, one of the things that really stood out to me was just the great disparity in what children were worrying about. And one of those was students who were worrying about, where am I going to eat? Because I eat two meals a day at school. And then another group of our young people who were upset because they couldn't play their club sport, or their family wasn't going to go on the spring break trip that they normally go on. And what I've kind of said to the community and to our staff and to myself is that all of those challenges matter to those people. And we don't need to be in a place of evaluating what the challenges are. But I will say that we've seen a group of students who haven't had a lot of life upset or disappointment or struggle really have to learn how to make some changes in how they manage struggle. And then we've seen a group of our young people who struggle through all the time and have just done more of that in this time.
How are your teachers coping as you've talked through this, saying the things you've heard from them? I'm feeling a sense of sadness. They become teachers because they enjoy children, and what a loss for them as well.
I certainly feel that from them. We've heard that shared from teachers, and I feel a really deep empathy to what they're feeling, both for what they're feeling about their profession right now, and also the worry that they're having, be that health related or financial or concern for their own children or care for loved ones, the whole gamut of things that people are working through right now. But from a professional standpoint, a few things have really been shared. One is that they've had to learn a whole new digital platform. And that's not a small thing. For some of our teachers who have more tech expertise, it's been an easier shift. But for some of our teachers, and I would include myself in this if I were in a classroom, the shift to using all these new digital platforms and delivering completely virtual instruction, it's required a whole different way of planning and thinking about the delivery of instruction, the assessment of what students are learning. A lot of our teachers have reported spending tremendous time way beyond what they would in a typical school year, to prepare lessons, to be ready, to set up their day, even things like inputting grades, which is a pretty rote experience for most teachers, has been totally new. So there's just been a layer of stress that I think they've felt. And then the other thing is, those of us who have worked in schools know this. There's an environment that is created in working at a school that is social and supportive for the staff. And so they have lunch together and they have connections with one another. They go out and walk on the track during a conference period. They meet before school for breakfast. There's a social gathering. So schools are really hubs for our teachers. And in the absence of those things, with all the challenges added in, it's been a tremendously hard time.
So I know that in Los Angeles County, calls to the child abuse hotline decreased by 50% since we've been under the safer at home orders. To me, the great irony of safer at home is that home isn't a safe place for many children. I attribute the reduction in calls to fewer third-party eyes, like teachers, noticing that a child is in danger. Have you seen similar trends in your district?
Our reports to DCFS are definitely down. And I would attribute it to exactly what you've shared here. We just don't have the ability to observe behavior. And the majority of report that's made to a child abuse hotline happens through the observance of behavior, be that a behavior change. It's infrequently. It's not as common as people would think that there's actually an observance of a physical mark or some kind of overt sign of abuse. That happens, but it's not the most common. The most common is really a difference in affect, recognizing that a student is showing something that is not common to them. And then also the relationship that gets established and developed over time, and the safe space that's created for children to talk about what life is bringing to them. And so in the absence of that time to really observe one another and be together, I think calls are definitely down. I know it's been one of, I would say my, and I think I'm not alone in that, I would say our greatest worry is what's happening for children that we don't know and that we can't observe and that we can't then respond to. And I would extend it to our medical community as well, because sometimes a medical provider is an observance of something that's of concern. And I think with the obvious nature of the pandemic that we've been in, people have accessed less medical care for non-COVID related issues. And so there's just been this detachment from the type of contact that we would typically have with one another, even just right down to kids playing outside in the neighborhood and recognizing that child is acting different, mm-hmm. or that child who's always right in the middle of everything is now really withdrawn. What's going on? We don't observe one another.
Right. That makes sense. So is what I'm understanding, though, is a lot of the reports that came prior to COVID were through disclosures in a way, because the teacher and the child, they have a relationship, a trusting relationship, a closeness. The teacher notices something wrong because they're together. And then ultimately there's a disclosure. And that's what's not happening to the same degree right now, because we're just not physically together. Did I understand that correctly?
Yes. The majority of our reporting happened through children sharing, not through something that's just observed. Sometimes there's a pairing of the two where there's something that's observed. The teacher or adult on staff may question what they're seeing, and then the child shares. But the majority of our reporting happens because of what children actually report to us. And that happens because of relationship.
Right. Because they trust that adult mm-hmm. in their life. Mm-hmm. Do you worry about what traumas we're going to find when we return to in-person classrooms?
Oh, I could just never sleep thinking about the worry of what we're going to find. I think that there are so many ways that being at home could be hard for many of our children. And the idea that they've exclusively been at home, I think it's just raising up a lot of trauma. I also think that there's likely been more stressors, which we know more adult stressors leads to more trauma for children.
Right.
And I think that extends to everything from financial worry to, we have young people who are caring for siblings. One of the reasons I'm so excited about the prospect of bringing elementary students back, and we look forward to bringing secondary students back to physical in-person school as well. We will bring elementary back as well, or first. And I think that will relieve stress from secondary students who are caring for their younger siblings during the day. I was in a high school going back a couple of weeks and observed a teacher's Zoom lesson. And one of the young women, who was, I think, a junior, was holding a baby on her lap and had about a 2-year-old next to her. And those were her younger siblings that she was caring for while she was in her Algebra 2 class.
Wow.
So I think that's the experience of more of our students than what we even know.
Right. Well, along with that, given these pressures on those kids, are you seeing an increase in chronic absenteeism since remote learning?
Yes, our attendance is down. It's not down as much as I think we would expect, but the thing that we are really monitoring and wondering about is we can only monitor attendance by how students log in, but logging in doesn't mean you're attending. And so there's different circumstances. There's the chronic absenteeism that looks like student just never logs in. But there's the chronic absenteeism that looks like they log in sometimes, but they're not really present for the class. And then within that, there's all kinds of questions we could ask. Well, are they having a technology issue? Is it a connection problem? Is their Chromebook not working? Or are they just purely not attending? So we have less students than would be expected, I think, that are just not showing up ever. But we do worry from the perspective of, are they really present?
Right. And therefore learning.
And therefore all that you say.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess somewhat related to that, a switch to the digital world does heighten opportunity gaps in education, or it certainly can. I know our experience at the Guidance Center when we had to move to telepsychiatry, it was really difficult to reach our clients who didn't have a computer. They didn't have the internet or access to a quiet space to talk. We had clients who were doing their therapy sessions on their mom's cell phone in the Starbucks parking lot because that's where they had Wi-Fi. Has this been a problem in the education system as well?
It's definitely been something we continue to work a lot on. And from the beginning of the pandemic back in March, and then even at the beginning of this year, school year, when we knew we were continuing, we did several things to try to mitigate the challenges, but we still have a worry that there are people in our community that are struggling with the digital divide. So we've given out almost 40,000 Chromebooks as a way of providing access. We've given out about 7,000 hotspots to allow Wi-Fi connection. A hotspot would give access to as many as 10 devices.
Wow.
Interestingly enough, we learned that one of the points of interference is that in an apartment building, if you're working on a hotspot, someone in the neighboring apartment could actually be pulling from that hotspot and therefore affecting what the people in the apartment you're trying to give the access to are experiencing. So we've learned all kinds of things, but as a simple response, yes, it's a huge worry. And we continue to worry about the ways in which students are struggling with technology that we don't even know. So I was going into an elementary school some weeks ago. There was a family on the stairs of the elementary school, and they were there for the purpose of drawing the Wi-Fi from the school.
Wow.
So, and the mother was sitting there with two children for the whole day, just being extremely diligent and resourceful in trying to have access. But it shows the nature of the struggle that people are having, and that's been a real source of worry for us.
I'm sure. And good for her, but how sad that she had to do that, right?
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I felt like, in fact, I just went to her and said, I see you and I really appreciate how hard you're working for your children. And in case nobody tells you, you've been an extra good mom today. Good for you for doing that. But my heart was kind of breaking in the same moment because that's hard to do. And it means she's doing her life while not doing her life while they're doing their school. And I think that's been a lot of what our parents have been experiencing, is just a total challenge with doing the things, be it work or household responsibilities or life management. It's kind of stifled what adults are able to do because they're helping their children access school.
Right. Absolutely. I hope that it brought her comfort to hear that you saw her.
sometimes I think especially as women, we just have to recognize other moms, other mothers, right? And say, I see the extra steps you're taking. And in case nobody thanks you today, good for you.
Yeah, I think that's really beautiful. I think that's a powerful message. So, you know, I have utter faith that school districts have plans to make up for any deficits in learning that might have occurred during the pandemic. But how can we also make up for deficits in that sort of whole child socio-emotional learning that was missed or lost during remote learning? You get a six-year-old in who spent all of kindergarten on Zoom. How do we help them catch up and make up for that sort of lost social interaction?
We're having an all-the-time conversation about this, and we're often asked about learning loss and what are we doing to mitigate learning loss. And our first approach will be care for children and a focus on reacclimating everybody to a school environment. Your point is well taken. We will have students in the fall who are entering second grade, and hopefully we'll be able to go back for the end of the school year. But if we didn't, we would have students entering second grade who hadn't been on a campus since halfway through their kindergarten year. So their whole context for being in a school space is something we need to pay a lot of attention to. And I am completely of the belief and really leading the effort around the social emotional supports that we need to have in place for all of our students and adults upon return. And the idea that you can learn and fill in learning gaps before you're emotionally safe and comfortable doesn't apply. And so the way we've been talking about it is Maslow's hierarchy of needs before Bloom's taxonomy of learning. And we really just need to deeply care for our children and spend time with that. Let that be okay for teachers, because teachers view learning as if they're not teaching intensely, then they haven't kept their foot on the gas enough. And so we do need to message to teachers that we need to care for them, but also we need to help them show care for their students in a different way so that everybody can return to a place of being able to learn more. And I think when we create that safety, the learning is going to happen more quickly.
I think that's very wise. I would agree with that. Attend to those basic human needs first before there's an expectation that our children can move to those higher function levels of learning. I think that's very wise. But
it's kind of like in the therapy, in the mental health world, where someone's really struggling and they, you know, the ask is, can they go to therapy every day? And more therapy doesn't make you more better.
Right.
Right. There's got to be a base of just established health and care and skills prior to being able to really take in more therapeutic intervention. And the same is true in this instance for education.
Right. That makes perfect sense. You know, I worry a lot about, you know, we hear people say, I can't wait. I can't wait till we can go back to school. I can't wait till we can go back to work, go back to normal. I worry that the transition is going to be a lot harder than people anticipate. I think we're going to see delayed grief. We're going to see acting out behaviors. We're going to see evidence of trauma that was missed. What can we do now to help our children and families?
So we're talking about this transition back to school right now for elementary, and we're talking from the perspective of really having our staff do some intentional outreach to students and families prior to their return, a real check-in. How are you doing? What has life been like for your family? What has this experience been like? Are there things that we should really know about your child before they come back to school? Mm-hmm. We have families who have experienced a tremendous amount of loss that is COVID related, that is related to other health challenges, that's related to homes and jobs and all kinds of things. So just trying to get as much information as we can from families ahead of time about who is returning to us and what might help them feel safe and cared for upon their return. doing the same type of outreach with students so that students feel like they're coming to someone that they know. We've talked about the idea of giving students an opportunity to come to school and quote unquote meet their teacher before, even though they've been with their teacher all year. I know my own child said recently about one of her teachers who she really likes. She said, you know, I don't know if I would recognize her if I saw her out in the world.
Wow.
And it's an interesting thought, right? Because she's been her teacher all year and she really likes her. But just, it's different when you see someone. Like she said, I've never even seen her body. I don't know how tall she is. And it's kind of that connection of like creating a space for children to meet their teachers and reacclimate to adults. And then the other thing is just, I think we may all be a bit socially challenged right now, right? We just haven't interacted in space with one another in a very long time. And then in the process, the rules have changed. Like we're supposed to wear masks and not touch each other and not even get within 6 feet of each other.
Right.
I think about what that does to children who gravitate to one another and what that's going to be like. And I think we're going to have to do some reteaching of social behaviors.
Yes. I think about that a lot with little ones. Like I, you know, my twins are almost 18 now. But you know, I remember little kids, they're like puppies. They climb on each other. They touch each other. Like that's a huge part of their social interaction. So it's going to be a shift just having that different expectation. So I think it's going to be curious how that all plays out. And being able to see people's faces again in person and read facial expressions, it's all going to be, I mean, it's been a year.
I know, it's really different.
It really is.
It's been really different.
You know, I have from day one been so impressed with Long Beach Unified's partnerships. And I think your leadership has a big role in that, that the partnership your district has with community organizations, with mental health agencies is really tremendous. And how can agencies like the Guidance Center support school districts through what we should anticipate will be a stressful transition? How can we help you?
Yeah, I appreciate the question. And I also appreciate what you first said. I'll say that our school district really values our work as a part of the community. And with that, we need everybody's expertise to do what we do. And so we do take time in relationship with community agencies because we recognize that we have an expertise to offer, but so do all of the people that we work with, health professionals, mental health professionals, childcare professionals. We need everybody to care well for our students. In terms of the types of support that we need, a few things come to mind. One is just the ongoing, very intentional and supportive way that the Guidance Center works with our schools, which is not just in delivery of therapy to our children, but it's also training of staff, being available for back to school night and open house and different types of workshops during the year, reaching out to teachers, doing the brown bag lunches, trying to be consultants to adults, recognizing that that's a way to access children. Those are all things that have happened over a long term, and more of all of that will be greatly welcomed right now. And I also think that we need mental health professionals who can really look holistically at what people are experiencing right now and not through the lens of trying to diagnose everybody. I have a worry that because we are all, I won't just say children, I'll say we all are going to be in a different state of development, that there could be a tendency to want to diagnostically view changes in behavior. And I don't think we know that. And I think we need help from mental health professionals, especially who can kind of normalize the behaviors we're seeing, given the experience that we've all just had. My worry is that teachers are going to view student behaviors as being something that should be pathologized when really I think we're going to have a very long transition period and a welcoming back period before we really know what we're looking at in terms of what the students need. And mental health professionals can help with that.
I'm really glad you said that. And I can certainly say that would be something we would like to be support you with. I don't think we know what the norm will be when we go back. So how do you say what's not the norm? Our circumstances are going to be so different. We don't have an established normal right now. And that should be expected. So yes, if there's any way we can support in that, and even telling parents too, this is normal. This is a normal transition. Let's just support your child through this. You know, I try to end all of these on a bright side. So despite all the challenges of the past year, and I can't imagine running such a large school district, in this way, but, what are the bright sides? Were there any unexpected bright sides, or what still gives you hope?
Yeah, there have definitely been a lot of bright sides in a really challenging time. And I'll say that one of our challenges has been Zoom life. And one of the unexpected bright sides has just been the connectedness that Zoom life allows. So I would actually label that as one of the bright sides. It's just very easy for people to get together and talk to one another. And I think that that will continue, and that the virtual platforms that we've used will be something that we pull on going forward. The other bright side that I would say is that in a totally different way, the community has all struggled on something at the same time. And over time, we've had groups who tend to struggle a lot and groups who aren't struggling as obviously at the same time. And now we've had this experience where we've all experienced a life shutdown. I'm sure we all know somebody who has had COVID. I would reckon that we all know somebody who's lost their life related to COVID or some kind of health connection. So this idea of collective community hurt, I hope will become a bright side. Mm. I hope that it will be a bringing people together, not bringing people apart. And I think that while there's definitely been a lot of challenges, both in terms of our racial and equity and civil unrest conversations and experiences, I like to pull on the idea that community hurt can be a place that we can go forward from together. And so I hold a bright side in that. And I actually, in terms of hope, I feel like there's a real strength in the community of Long Beach. And so I hold a lot of hope in the power of what we can do together in this community.
Thank you, Tiffany. You have actually really reassured me. I have found great reassurance in what you're saying. It doesn't surprise me at all that you share the concerns about what our kids are going through right now, but the district is clearly rallying around and putting thought to how to address all of it. And I really find comfort in your planning and your words. So I just thank you for your very vital role in supporting the whole student.
I appreciate the time with you as well. And maybe as a closing thought, one of the things that I've learned is that it's easy to talk about vulnerability in leadership, and then it's hard to be vulnerable in a place of leadership. And the last year has really, I think anyone who's in a leadership position would say that there's been a very public vulnerability in just leading through this time. And while that's hard, I also take that as a good thing. It's very normalizing, and it causes us as leaders to eat humble pie regularly.
Daily.
I'm taking strength from that and hoping that maybe a real connection to our community will come from showing a lot of vulnerability and a lot of, you know, really kind of public mistake and public challenge and experiences that we've never had to move through publicly before.
Right. So the very public, I don't have the answers. I don't know how to handle this. I'm just going to do my best. It's so interesting that you say that. I have, despite being remote, feel a greater closeness with my staff at the Guidance Center. I think because we have gone through this together, it has been, I think, really helpful to feel that we were part of a family and a team, even though we're physically remote. I absolutely feel closer to them now than I did prior to the pandemic. Yeah. Well, thank you, Tiffany.
Thank you.
What we've highlighted today is the overwhelming impact the pandemic and the related need to live and learn remotely has had on the mental health and emotional well-being of children. Schools play a vital supportive role in the emotional and social development of children, a role that has been dramatically restricted in a remote world. My hope is that we all gain some insight, even as simply a greater understanding of what our children have endured and the support they will need to continue to thrive going forward.
In My Backyard is brought to you by the Guidance Center, a children's mental health agency in Long Beach, California. In My Backyard is produced by Tricia Costales and Matthew Murray. Production assistance provided by Julie Ruano. Thank you to J. Vincent B. for original music. All other music licensed through Soundstripe. Thank you to our listeners and supporters. Please visit tgclb.org or text HOPE to 562-262-5689 to make a one-time donation or join our Hope and Healing Club to become a monthly donor today. Subscribe to In My Backyard on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.